I'm going to tell you what, we may be just getting started, but as of recording here, I'm on my second cup of coffee. We got a great show coming. I'm glad you're joining us this week. It's 278th time we've come back here to the Parish of the Patriots. I thank every one of you for coming back. Hopefully we'll have a great show. I believe we will. I have confidence, faith. We have a fun, great discussion. If you are new, appreciate you giving us a listen and stopping by. I ask that you'll stay for the whole thing. I will tell you, we have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly the halfway point of the show, very roughly. And I encourage you, stick with it. Don't sit there and say, well, I ain't going to sit around this no Jesus stuff. You might say something funny in the first part, but I ain't sitting around. I mean, it's up to you. That's why I tell everybody in advance. That's why I don't mix it in. I kind of put it in its own segments. If you just absolutely, positively don't want to hear it, you don't have to. But I encourage you to give it a shot at least once. You might be surprised. You might find some useful information, some useful ideas, some pointers, some tips. What do you got to lose? What are you worried about? What are you scared of? Give it a listen. But if you don't, if you absolutely say there's no way I'm listening to that, then I don't care. Go to hell. Enjoy it. It's up to you. I ain't dragging you anywhere. But I'm just saying, you might get something. I might be surprised. If you get something out of the... People say, GPD, how do you keep it up? Well, maybe they don't say that. But people might be wondering. There might be somebody saying, how do you do it week in, week out? I don't get overly concerned. If somebody bound and determined that they want to go to hell, I don't care. Knock yourself out. Nothing wears me out. I'm sympathetic to unbelievers that just don't understand. But when you got somebody that they act like you, they got you over a barrel because, you know, it's your job. You've got to try to convince me. And then they want to be all argumentative and hateful. And you're supposed to be nice. Because after all, you're the one trying to convince me to believe in this Jesus stuff. See, I don't have that stress because I don't give a shit. If you want to go to hell, knock yourself out. That's all you. You can listen in here. You can listen to people. You can read the Bible, whatever. And you might find life easier for yourself. But if you're bound and determined to go to hell, it's no skin off my teeth. No skin off my back. Anyway, I'm not. If you get something out of the show, passing the plate around real quick. If you get something out of the show, drop something in the plate. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I do appreciate it. We have the one privacy coin, which would be Le Snail de la Mail. The snail mail. We got an address right there. There you go. Put an address and a stamp on an envelope. Doesn't get any easier than that. You don't even have to have a computer for that. Right there. I don't know what to tell you. It's the easiest thing in the world. And drop your notes. Some people don't. You don't have to drop a note in there. Some people don't. Most people do. I always, then that brings us to listener supported mailbag. In some weeks, we wind up the whole first part of the show just be stuff y'all bring in, a listener supported mailbag. It makes my life easier. This week, however, is brief. This is from Mr. T, GPD, cross plus Swassy equals love. Thank you, Mr. T. And so concludes our listener supporter mailbag. See, it does. Some weeks it doesn't take very long. Thankfully, I don't mix up whether the show is good or not by the amount of feedback here. See, if I did that, I might get discouraged. I might think the show sucks. I only got one this week. Anyway, I don't think that. I understand. No, really, seriously, I do. I have some folks that do like once a month, some folks that drop something in the plate once a year even. You know, it's all good. I'm just having a little fun with y'all. You know, I would say, good, one of the things that drives me crazy here in America, the land of the free, we got our constitutional rights and so on and so forth. One of the things that drives me crazy is they talk about, you know, free speech. We don't, but they won't tell us the rules. I was thinking about how you apply this to different platforms like social media and whatnot. We're going to use YouTube as an example. You know, we don't have any actual clear rules. we have les terms of service that have these that are so vaguely written, which basically means if the moderators on YouTube just don't like you, they could just ban you because it's very vaguely written. It's like how a lot of laws that get passed, they're vaguely written. That way they can say you broke the law anytime they want to. It's not because the people writing the laws are stupid. It's because they're malevolent. They want to write these laws in a vague way so that if you ever cross the system, they can say you violated the law and they can put you in prison. Simple as. They say, that law is written way too vague. It's a feature, not a bug. These terms of service are that way. You know, they're written vaguely. That way they can just ban you as a person. Like if I wanted to do YouTube videos, you know, I couldn't do that. Even if I were doing YouTube videos on something completely unrelated to this show. Say I wanted to do YouTube videos, I don't know, on different recipes and cooking. I can guarantee you that at some point I would get banned. Just as a person. They have terms of service. They don't have rules. They'll point to countries and say, well, see, look over here. This country has rules. They say, you can't say this. And I say that's much more preferable to having these vaguely written terms of service that we live under. And you don't really know. On the one hand, they say you have freedom of speech. And then on the other hand, if you say something they don't like, the hammer comes down. Yeah. I could put this show, like if I did a, say I wanted to do a video show besides this show. I do this show, but I say I want to start putting a show on YouTube. They had rules. They say, look, you can have your show on YouTube, monetizer, whatever. You're not allowed to talk about Jews or this or that. You know, just laid out. These are the topics you're not allowed to talk about. I could work with that. I say, okay, well, on the video show, we won't talk about any of the verboten things. We could do an apolitical show, just talk about whatever. But again, it doesn't work that way. Terms of service, very vague. I don't know. You know, one of the advantages you get, the longer you live, you see things. And you know you've heard these same lines time and again. Particularly conservatives, they're stuck in this rut of still trying to somehow support the system. You know, they're still somehow trying to support the system because they just don't know what the answer is. Otherwise, if you give up on the system, then what? You know, if you come to terms with the fact that we live under a completely illegitimate system, then what's the answer? So they don't have any answer. They come up with the same thing. Yeah. Vote harder. You know, like I say, yeah, I always use the example of all of the red hat folks, the Trump people who have sit here and for the last 4 years talked about how the election was stolen from Donald Trump. And now they're all saying everybody's got to get out here and vote for Trump. But I thought the last time was stolen. You know, how do you put all of that together? If they stole it last time, are you telling me that this time they wouldn't dare cheat? Doesn't make any sense. That they don't have anything else. They don't know. They don't know how to do anything different. And you see this in people on the conservative side. On some things, they're really good. I'm going to do something. I'm going to link an article up. And that's not something I usually do here on the Parish of the Patriots. It's just something we usually do on the Daily Nationalist shows. But I'm going to link the article. I'm not going through the article, but I'm going to go through some of the points in the article because it really nails down to me what I refer to as conservative BS. And I look at this and this stuff because you saw it a lot in the debate too, you know, these points. Social Security, Medicare. I call it conservative BS for boomers. And that's, I'm not putting boomers down. That's not a slight against my baby boomer audience. It's not a slight against y'all, but that's, you're the target audience. Conservative BS for boomers. A lot of people pointed out in the debates, which has been this way in many debates for a long time. Team D candidate, Team R candidate will stand up there and argue about who's going to do more for Black Americans, who's going to do more for Latino Americans, who's going to do more for this group or that group. White Americans never get mentioned, and people point that out. They say, well, do we exist? Well, what you get, what white Americans get, is the pandering, you know, the BS for boomers. That's your deal for white people, because that's the larger demographic of white people. When they're up there, people said, you know, Trump and Biden, neither one of them say anything about doing anything for white people. Well, when they're up there talking about saving Social Security and Medicare, that's your white people talking point. They just don't say white people. They talk about boomer stuff, because that's the larger demographic. I laughed because they were talking about, you know, somebody said something like, I think it was one of the moderators, like, you know, in X amount of years, Social Security is going to be in real trouble. What are you going to do about it? And it's like, in about that amount of years, the government's would theoretically be paying every tax dollar towards interest on the debt. In other words, they're going to be broke before then. Social Security is going to be the least of your worries. They got nothing new. Now, this article I'm leaking up to, and like I said, I'm not reading the article, but I'm going to read the points because I think it's funny, because this shows how there's nothing new. Nobody breaks out of that. Even people that are good on some other points. I always tell you, some of y'all that I interact with, you know, I sometimes hear from some of y'all and you say, you know, I love your stuff, but that point you made on this show, I disagree with that. I'm not offended by that. I don't expect anybody to sit around and agree 100% of everything I say. I tell you, I could be wrong. It's not out of the realm of possibility. In fact, I think when, you know, the fact that you say, oh, I don't agree with this, that just tells me that this audience, you know, it thinks for themselves. I think that's a good thing. This article comes from the American Conservative. And the title of the article is Ideas for Candidates Beyond Talking Points. Now, this is written by Douglas McGregor, Colonel Douglas McGregor. Most of y'all, I'm sure, are familiar with this guy. And a lot of foreign policy stuff, especially, you know, pertaining to like Russia and whatnot, he's good. You know, this is one of those cases where you don't have to agree with everything somebody says. On foreign policy stuff, generally, this guy's pretty good. But on what we're going through today, he reverts back to conservative BS for boomers. He talks about, you know, the unipolar world is coming to an end, America, and that's all good. But then he gets some ideas, supposedly beyond talking points, but mostly they're talking points. They're things I've heard from conservatives my entire life, and I've been around a lot longer than some of you. So he says the candidates for presidency in Congress should provide this to chart a new course. The candidates should pursue action in 10 key areas. See, this is the action that should be pursued. Number one, secure America's borders. Again, I've been hearing this my whole life. I remember in the 80s hearing this. If we just pass this latest amnesty bill, the other side of that is after that, the borders close, ain't nobody coming down here. They're going to have to jump through some hoops to get into the country. Conservatives truly are the Charlie Brown kicking Lucy's football. They really are. I get tired of this sort of thing come up, and they buy into it. They do some sort of immigration reform, and what it'll be, we have a bipartisan effort. Yes, we conservatives are going to go ahead and begrudgingly agree to amnesty of some form or another, but the Democrats totally promised that we're also passing strict border raid. We're shutting the border down after that. And it never, ever happens. I've seen this conversation happen so many times. Like I say, back in the 1980s, they passed some sort of immigration reform. This is it. Yeah, we're giving all these people amnesty, but after that, ain't no one coming in the country. Well, you see how that worked out. It's just more of the same. It's like if you got scammed by an Indian scammer, and then like 2 weeks later, you got scammed again. You just forgot what happened 2 weeks ago, or 2 months, or 2 years even. Doesn't matter. You would think it would stick with you. That you got scammed. I ain't falling for this again. But conservatives, for being supposedly fairly intelligent people, they fall for the same scams over and over. We got to secure the border. Well, that's all good and well. But we've all heard this before. We know it isn't going to happen. Number two, defend America first. Reserves the use of American military power for the defense of the U.S. American citizens and identified vital strategic interests unless the U.S. is directly attacked by a foreign state or state power. See, there's already the problem. You see, this is how conservative. Vital strategic. You see, there's the if or the but. It starts off, it sounds good, doesn't it? People just hear the first part. The military needs to just be focused on only defending America. Well, that sounds real good. Only problem is there's a lot of people making a lot of money, including politicians that get kickbacks on this. A lot of people are making a lot of money, and they're not going to let you do that under this system. Because if you did actually do that under this system, you would say, well, actually, there's nobody looking to attack us. We could go ahead and cut our military spending by, 90%. Ain't nobody going to do that. And you see, even in this guy's own words, and again, McGregor's good on a lot of stuff, but even in his own words, they can't help themselves. Identified vital, you know, because there's a but in there. There's the wiggle room. Identified vital strategic interests. You see, that's vague. That could be anything. Well, you see, defending our greatest ally in the Middle East, that's in our vital strategic interest. The Ukraine, hell, that's the excuses they give us now. It's in our vital security interest. It's in our vital strategic interest to send more weapons and more things to Ukraine. Hell, forget Lucy holding the football. Conservatives trying to stand that thing up on its tip itself. They setting themselves up. They don't even have to have. They teeing it up on that little football stand and it's broke. And they don't even care. They fall over. They still missing it themselves. They writing it in themselves. They can't help it. Even in the one hand saying the military should be reduced to just defending America. But you see, it's so indoctrinated in their brain. They can't help it. And you know, our vital strategic interest. That's what they claim everything is. They claim we have these hundreds of military bases all over the world because all of these are about our strategic interests. We attacked the U.S. attacked Libya because it was our vital strategic interest. They do all of these things and they claim it's in our vital strategic interests. More of the same. Restore the rule of law. We must support law enforcement agencies, ensure they have the resources necessary to keep our communities safe. This is about a boomer talking point as possible. We got to support our troops. We got to support our police. Let's put our blue flags in the back window and talk about how we support our law enforcement. It's reflective of an inability to grasp the reality of the world. I always say on this show, the whole show. In fact, everything we do, I'm going to lump Dr. Johnson in here, whether he likes it or not. Everything we do at Radio Albion, I say with confidence, is focusing on truth. And this is vital because if you don't get to the truth of things, you can't function properly in the world around you. And you're living under a malevolent system. If you think it's benevolent, you're going to get into trouble because you don't understand the reality, the truth of it. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, the reality of what we live in today are the police are revenuers. They're there. Their primary job is to collect money from you. That's their primary job. doctors are drug dealers. The healthcare industry, doctors are by and large drug dealers, and the police are revenuers. When you understand that, we gotta support our police. Support our police. The same police that went out there during the BLM riots and took a knee, the same police that when people are out there protesting, say, against Israel, go bash your head in. The same police that when you're driving along, mind your own business, and they pull you over for going 7 miles over the speed limit, and that cop has took too many steroids that day, and he's having a bad day, and he's coming up there holding his hand on his gun, talking about, don't move, don't move. He's going to take his bad day off on you. Start demanding you get out of the car, and you're like, I ain't got to get out of the car. What the hell you on about? We got to support our police so they can lock up the criminals. We got to lock up the criminals. Only that isn't the way it works. Their primary job is to collect revenue from you, to find a violation so they can get your money. That's their primary job. Number four. Build new armed forces for the 21st century. We need it. We're back to the military again. I thought the military was just going to be focused on defending America. Well, you can roll that back. You can cut that spending 90%, but we're back to the military. Building new armed forces for the 21st century. We need a strong military designed to protect our nation in the 21st century, not an anachronistic and expensive structure with an enormous overhead and very few fighters. Dude, we have a space force. What are you on about? We're Buck Rogers in the 21st century. We got a space force. The hell you on about? We so high tech, we got stealth fighters that won't even fly. We got every kind of stealth, and they're real expensive. What are you on about? We got a space force. We fixing to launch the USS Enterprise. Space force. Can't get no more 21st century. Hell, we got a space force. The reality is, again, if you reduce the military to simply defend America if it's attacked, you could cut all that crap by about 90%. Especially if America's not going around the world pissing everybody off. See, if I was writing these, I would have a completely different, I'd put them in everyday man's language, working man's language that people could understand. You know, like my point number four would be, America needs to quit going around the world acting like an asshole. America needs to quit going around the world acting like that drunk asshole at the bar that wants to fight everybody all the time. Maybe would stop a lot of our problem. Number five, re-energize the U.S. economy. Man. It's the same talking points. That sounds good. That ship has already sailed. You know, Trump talks about, or he's talked about, you know, we're bringing back American manufacturing jobs. We're bringing those jobs back. How? You could build a new factory. I mean, we do that. Who's going to run it? Who's going to run it? Somebody's got to understand how to do these things. And the people that understood how to do these things are all gone. We lost that human capital. When the government in conjunction with the corporations working together, they always act like China stole our jobs. They snuck over here and stole our jobs. I was around when it happened. The government gave them money to help them pay for it, to help cover the costs. The government working in conjunction with the corporations shipped jobs overseas as fast as they could. And they'd set up these factories in China and they'd go over there and show them how to do it. You're going to bring back jobs? You think the Chinese that know how to do it are going to come over here and train us so that we can take their jobs? No, because they're not retarded. They're not stupid. So who's going to learn how to do it? Number six. This one's funny to me because I talk about this all the time on this show. Build new infrastructure. You see, this is a failure to grasp that the problem, all of these points miss the mark in part because it's a failure to grasp the level of corruption and let me back up. It's a failure to grasp and acknowledge the level of corruption of the system itself. We need to build new infrastructure. We need to fix our infrastructure. Man, this country has spent trillions of dollars on infrastructure. And I was driving along the other day down the road, down a highway, down a major highway. And I hit a spot in the highway that had buckled up. You couldn't see it because the pavement all blends in. And I hit it. And it's so hard, I thought it was going to knock the front end out from under my vehicle. And I always just shake my head and say, third world roads. So many of the roads, major highways, I ain't even talking back roads, major highways are third world tier in this country. They've spent trillions of dollars. Why are the roads still shit? Because of corruption. That money just disappears. You can apply that to everything. Oh, how many times? We're going to dedicate all of this money to education. It's vague. It's like how they write the, we were just talking about how they write the laws vague. So that you really don't understand what they mean. That way, if they ever want to throw you in jail because they don't like you, they can. It's the same thing. We're going to spend more money on infrastructure and education. That's vague. Nobody ever points to where that money actually went. It's intentional. That way, you don't know where it went because it went in, a bunch of it went in somebody's pocket. I mean, yeah, they'll do a few road projects. And it's, you know, there's some window dressing there. But it's vague intentionally. So you don't ask. You don't know where the money went. It went in somebody's damn pocket. Again, it's like we're going to secure the border. I've heard we're going to rebuild the infrastructure. We're going to fix the infrastructure. I've heard this my whole life. And it just gets worse. They spend the money, but it just gets worse. Why is that? Because it's going in somebody's pocket. Number 7, create energy independence. Okay, well, that's well and good. That's a doable thing. But the first thing you're going to have to do is say the one thing that conservatives are not willing to say because the media will laugh at them and call them stupid. They're scared of what the media is going to say. The first thing you're going to do if you're going to build energy independence is you're going to have to say the truth. And that is climate change is a hoax. It's a money scam and it's a hoax. And it's a way of lowering everybody's standard of living while funneling what's left of the money into the pockets of a very, very small group of people at the very top. Climate change is a hoax. You seen the Trump debate? If you said Trump didn't say it was a hoax. None of these conservatives will say climate change is a hoax because the media will mock them and have a conniption fit. They're also scared of what the media is going to say. No wonder they can't get anything actually done. Climate change is a hoax. You want energy independence? You're going to have to start with saying, we're not doing any of this stupid climate change BS. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. It's a part of the cycle of life. We breathe it out. The plants breathe it in. Just the way God designed it. They're scared to say it. So I say, truth. You've got to be able to acknowledge truth or you can't get anywhere. Climate change is a hoax. I'll tell you this. I don't believe too. Because again, I've lived long enough. Peak oil. I've heard peak oil. I remember reading when I was a kid that by 1980, by 1990, we're going to start running out of oil. We've already hit peak oil by 1990. By 2000 at the outside latest, there's just not going to be any oil left. Here we are. Still got oil. I don't believe, I'm going to tell y'all, I don't believe in quote unquote fossil fuels. One guy wrote that in a book and everybody just picked it up and ran with it. One guy said they come from dinosaurs and everybody said, yep, that's it. Fossil fuel. That's bullshit. There ain't no damn way. I'm on a tangent here. This doesn't have anything to do with this. And I need to keep rolling, but I got to say this. You get common sense. There ain't no way. No way. All of the countless barrels of oil come from no damn dinosaurs. I think the truth is more like a part of the way the Earth's core functions. It as a byproduct of this, it produces oil. You know, you get into the heat in the core. I don't know the mechanics of it, but I think a more reasonable, when you look at things, a more reasonable assumption, a more reasonable hypothesis is that as a part of the Earth's function, the way it works, you know, things going on, chemical reactions happening deep down in the Earth with its core and the things going on. One of the byproducts of this is oil and gas gets produced. I think that's a lot better hypothesis than, well, these dinosaurs. How many damn dinosaurs could there have been? How many dinosaurs could you fit on the damn planet that we still pumping all these gajillion barrels of oil over all of these years and we still ain't out? They still talk about, we're going to run out of fossil fuels. See, they got to convince everybody of that so that they can then move you on to, you got to be putting up a windmill or some shit. I'm sorry, I'm off on a tangent. We got to get through these. Number 8, strengthen free speech and civil liberties. See, I did a show, one of these shows, Paris of the Patriots here, a while back. Free speech, and it was titled, Free Speech is a Lie. Free speech was a lie that we got sold. And see, you got people still buying into that lie. It's a lie. It was used, and it was handy until they got power. Now they've got power. Now that went out the window. It was a lie from the beginning. Don't be sitting there hung up on this lie going, we need to get back to free speech. It was a lie. It was part of the scam. Look, there's always going to be restrictions on speech. That's the reality. He says, free speech. It's got to be absolutely protected. And I guarantee you, if you went to in front of this person, started exercising some free speech that he didn't like, he's going to say, you can't say that. Stop that. You can't talk about those people. You can't say that. There's always going to be the exceptions. It's a lie from the get-go. To sit here and use these vagaries, these ideas. Free speech. We got to reestablish free speech in this country. And I guarantee you, whoever says that, you sit down without advocating, attacking anybody. They're going to find something. You can say something and they're not going to like it. And they're going to say you shouldn't be allowed to say that. I guarantee you. That same person who will sit here and spout nonsense about we need free speech, we need to get back to free speech in this country. If you say something that offends that person, he's going to say you're not allowed to say that. It's a lie from the get-go. There's always going to be restrictions on it. The only question is, who's making the restrictions and what's going to be restricted? Number 9, reorient education. And then he goes into people need to be getting more into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And I say, that sounds well and good. But what about the people that aren't capable of that? You know, what about the people who just simply, they don't have the ability to do that. Maybe they don't want to do that. Do they just get left behind? You know, well, what about the people who literally, it doesn't matter how hard they study, they're just not going to be capable of it. They don't have the intelligence for it. Do we just write those people off? Because he goes on in part of the reorient education, I'm trying to kind of move it along because we got to get through this, is, you know, we have a merit-based system. We need to get back to a merit-based system. If you have a truly merit-based system, then that means you're going to have a whole lot fewer people going to college and going into these things because most people aren't going to be capable. If you're talking about the very high echelons, you're going to have a huge bulk of your society that just are not mentally intelligent enough. And it's not even an insult to these people. You're just born that way. They're just not able. You're going to have a large segment of the population. It doesn't matter. You can give them all the books. You can do all of that. And they're not going to be able to do it. What do we do with those people? You know, we just write them off and say, well, tough for you. Let's keep on rocking. Number 10. This is our final point here. Forge national unity. At least 52 million people inside the U.S. were born in another country. It is time to insist that those coming legally to the U.S. immerse themselves in American culture and way of life or leave. Americans must unite to ensure that every American feels strong, secure, involved, and involved in our national life. Here's a highlight of conservative BS for boomers. You see, this is going back to yet another lie, which was the melting pot lie. And this is one that American boomers especially cannot let go of. They'll sit here and gripe and moan and look at how things are, and they'll say, we're supposed to be a melting pot. And they can't wrap their minds around the fact that that was a lie from the get-go. You know, look where it came from. It was a lie. They tricked you. It never existed. The melting pot, they can't let go of it. He says, talking about 52 million people inside the U.S. were born in another country. It's time to insist that those coming legally to the U.S. immerse themselves in American culture. Well, I'm sorry, but I look at what passes for American culture today, and I do not blame these people for not wanting to immerse themselves in it. You know? Seriously, who are we talking about here? Are we talking about the Muslims coming in? Are we talking about people from Latin America who are perhaps really hardcore practicing Catholics coming in? Because, like, if I'm Muslim and I come to the U.S. for whatever reason, I'm not going to immerse myself in what passes for American culture today. I'm not going to do that. I would not encourage them to do that. Why would anybody look at American culture and say, yeah, this is what I want to immerse myself in? Yes, I you know what? I'm going to go tell my daughter to take her hijab off and go be a TikTok slut. Maybe she can open up her own OnlyFans. Heck, she can make so much money being a whore on OnlyFans. You know, ain't no practicing Muslim daddy going to do that. Hell, shouldn't be a practicing Christian daddy do that either. But here we are. It's a part of American culture. This is BS aimed at boomers too, because it's this denial of what American culture is. When a person like this says American culture, it's that idealized culture. We live in a melting pot, and why everybody, we have this culture of hard work and rugged individualism, and people believe in consequences for their act. Look, none of that exists. Maybe it existed at one time. Now it only exists it's real in your mind. It only exists in your mind. You got to look around this country, and what is American culture today? The real American, not what it is and what you envisioned it was when you were young, or what you think, or you looked at in a Norman Rockwell picture, because that ain't it. Not anymore. American culture, look at what American culture is. Mostly seems to be centered around some form of gay anal. And you're going to bring these people in. You're going to bring in a hardcore Catholic from Latin America, or a dedicated Muslim, and tell them you need to immerse yourself in American culture of gay anal and your daughters being sluts and whores on the internet or whatever. Because that's American culture now. Got to deal with reality. Instead, you just get conservative BS for boomers. Got to deal with reality. We got to deal with reality getting into the Christian specific segment. I can already tell the show's going to run long. I don't want to lose y'all's interest. Let's keep it rolling. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. As regular listeners are aware, I often like to point out, and is my belief, that you can't really understand the things going on in the world around us today without understanding, without grasping the spiritual context of it. I always find it humorous when atheists will see them, and they will curse and blame the faith for the state of the Western nations. They'll say it's the fault of Christianity. This, of course, with any kind of just under basic understanding of history, this makes no sense. If you look at the faith, you have to say here in America, we'll stick with what I know, but it all is reflective of pretty much all of the Western nations. If you look at here in America, if you were to ask somebody, when did America, in other words, the people, when did the people truly start turning away from the faith? I believe the vast majority of people, vast majority of you would answer probably around the 1960s. You could see that was that revolution, the cultural revolution. And you would point, I think the average person would look at the timeline and say, well, roughly around the 1960s, you had this shift. Now, if you also laid this side by side, if you overlapped, if you laid it on top of, when did the cultural rot? When did the nation start going downhill? And once again, I believe it aligns up with the 1960s. So you see a parallel with the destruction of our Western nations, the rot. We're seeing the more the end game of it now. But the beginning of it lines up with what? The beginning of when the people turned away from God. And yet you'll have these atheist spurgs and they'll sit there and it's Christianity's fault. Christianity, Christ cucks. These Christ cucks are the reason everything is like this. And yet you simply look and say, well, when did things start going downhill? Well, around the 1960s. When did the people start turning away from God and go chasing after their own desires? Roughly around the 1960s. It's basically the graphs line up. You know, the correlation is undeniable. So it just makes sense to say, as the people have turned away from God, things have gotten worse. But you see, those that don't have eyes to see these things, they deny it. They don't want to see these things. To sit here and say, the reason things are bad is because, what? The faith that sustained this society and built up the civilization, people turned away from that faith and things went the other direction and have devolved. But somehow it's the faith that came before that is the reason things are bad. It doesn't make any sense. The faith, understanding the Lord, coming to understand this walk you take, As a Christian believer, where you're understanding the Lord, you're trying to wrap your mind and you're trying to figure out and understand His ways as much as you can. It isn't just about the eternal. It is about that, obviously. But it also is about you will understand more about the world around you. It applies here, too. You look around. People look around. They say, why are things like this? Why are things so crazy? Why have things gotten so bad? And again, if you're able to see it in the spiritual context, it makes sense. Well, of course they're bad. Hell, the Bible is full of that pattern. The people get luxury. The people get things easy. The people start just getting really, what do I want to say, figuratively fat and happy. And they say, we don't need God. That's so all last generation. Let's have a big time. Let's have a big party. Let's just go chasing after our own desires. And time and time and time again, destruction is what follows. This applies to nations. It applies to people. It's the same lie. It's just applied on a grander scale. On an individual scale, Satan says, chase after sin. You'll get this momentary pleasure and it's totally worth it. And why wouldn't you? You only live once, right? Go chasing after this momentary pleasure. And every single time, I mean, there may be a momentary pleasure indeed, but the party leaves out of that is it always leads to grief. It always leads to destruction. Sin is always self-destructive. Yes, there may be a moment of pleasure in there, but it doesn't stop there. It always leads to destruction. Again, this applies to the individual or it applies to the group. When enough people collectively go chasing after sin, destruction follows. It always follows that pattern. So I say you can't truly understand the world around you without understanding, without applying the spiritual aspect of it. Now, Paul writes in the book of Romans, I believe it's in chapter 12, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. Most of you are probably familiar with that line. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. People often apply that to their own personal vendettas. I'm going to get back at them someday. God will get them for me. Now, one way of reading this, and I don't want to focus on, well, we're not going to focus on that in the context of Romans today, but I will say this. That is the promise of God's justice. Everything will be evened out. All the books will be evened out in the end. The Lord is all about justice. Everything will be put back in balance. Like I said, I don't want to focus on that in the context of the book of Romans. Instead, I want to go back to what Paul was referencing, which goes back to Deuteronomy. Go into the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 32, chapter 32. We're going to do verses 32 through 39. Verses 32 through 39 is written, "For their vine is the vine of Sodom and of the fields of Gomorrah. Their grapes are grapes of gall. Their clusters are bitter." We know what Sodom and Gomorrah reference to. "Their wine is the poison of dragons and the cruel venom of asps. Is not this laid up in store with me and sealed up among my treasures? To me belongeth vengeance and recompense. Their foot shall slide in due time, for the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things that shall come upon them make haste. For the Lord shall judge his people and repent himself of their servants, when he seeth that their power is gone and there is none shut up or left. And he shall say, where are their gods, their rock in whom they trusted? Which did eat the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of their drink offerings? Let them rise up and help you and be your protection. See now that I, even I, am he, and there is no God with me. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. Neither is there any that can deliver out of my hand." People put their faith in false gods, the things of this world, made up things, temporary things. Talk about idolatry. Everybody always imagines like some little wooden engraven image someone sits on a shelf and bows down to. But there are many forms of idolatry. Everybody has put their faith, all these people have put their faith in things that are worldly and things that are temporary. And what does the Lord say? Where's your gods now? Well, that's what you put your faith in. Let them deliver you. You rejected the Lord. The people have rejected the Lord and put their faith in these other things. As the phrase and terminology goes, they've gone a whoring after other gods. Then let their other gods deliver them. The people have turned away from the Lord. Now everything is 100% predictably an absolute shit show. It's written over and over. We just read it. Their vine is the vine of Sodom and Gomorrah. We're wrapping up Pride Month. It's the same pattern. As it says in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. I laugh when idiots sit around and go, "Oh, things are different now. It's the modern age." There's nothing new under the sun. They've gone a whoring after other gods, and now their vine is the vine of Sodom, fields of Gomorrah, doing the same shit. Why is everything a disaster? Well, I don't know. It's never happened before. No, it happens over and over. The people turn to the Lord. Things get better. The Lord delivers them. They get blessed with prosperity. With the prosperity, they turn away from the Lord. They go whoring after their own immediate pleasures. Look at the 1960s moving forward. Guess what the pattern says happens next? Welcome to 2024. And people sit around because they have no idea. They've turned their hearts away from the Lord. They turn around and go, "Why are things like this now? Why are things so terrible and degenerate? Nobody has any hope for a normal life. I don't understand. It must be the Christ cooks. I don't understand. Why are things like this?
This has never happened before. If there was only a book where I could read and see whether things like this has happened before.
They've happened over and over again. View yourself as an individual person. Choose to live. Do your best. Apply your heart to the Lord. Try to understand Him. Try to learn about Him. Praise God in the name of Jesus, that through Jesus Christ, you are, of course, going to sin and screw up, but God enables you to keep moving forward and learning about Him because you have salvation. Your faith is demonstrated by this pursuit of the Lord, and you individually go following after the Lord. You're going to come to understand these things. If you turn away from the Lord, reject the Lord, and go chasing after momentary pleasures, your personal life will wind up with negative consequences of a varying degree. Sin always leads to a negative outcome. It's always self-destructive. And the devil always gives you a choice. He'll lie to you. He'll try to deceive you in any manner he can. He promises the good part, leaves out the bad part, so on and so forth. The devil will sit there and tell you sin is safe and effective. He's not going to tell you about the blood clots coming later. I mean, probably not the best analogy. But if you do these things, you are going to wind up in a guarantee 100%. That is just the pattern. Sin always leads to a negative outcome of a varying degree. It may not be to a degree where it completely destroys your life, but there will be a negative outcome. What happens when the vast majority of people are doing the same thing? What are you going to see as a society? A negative outcome. If you've got a group of 100 people and 95 of them are doing things that are going to lead to a negative outcome, what are things going to look like for this group of 100 people? Well, it's going to be a shit show. Lo and behold, if you flip that around and 95% of that group of 100 is doing the right thing and pursuing the Lord, and guess what? You're going to have a positive outcome. Simple as. Simple as. Like I say, the devil always gives you a choice. Always remember, the devil gives you a choice. That way he can accuse you. This is the pattern. You have to understand, that's the pattern. You always have a choice. You're not going to be able to stand on the day of the Lord and say, well, I didn't have a choice. You had a choice. The devil wants you to have a choice. He can't accuse you if you didn't have a choice. Now, it might have been a difficult choice, depending on the circumstances. And usually, but usually, in all honesty, the difficult part of the choice is that that momentary pleasure sounds pretty good. It sounds really, really good. You want to ignore what the negative outcomes could be on the other side of it. You want that momentary pleasure and then stop. But of course, time keeps flowing forward. Then you get to deal with the destructive nature. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. Let's stick with our analogy of a little village on an island of 100 people living there and what they choose to do collectively. Which is just, when we say collectively, it means we're looking at the individual decisions each individual person in that village is making. And if, what are the bulk of them doing? Like I said, if 95% are choosing to do the right thing, you're going to have probably things are going to be functioning pretty well. If 95% of them are making destructive decisions, the village is going to be a mess. Maybe everybody's going to starve out. Get a choice. And let's say in our village of 100 people living on the island. Good. I like that number 100 because it makes it easy to think about percentages, right? Each person would be 1%. Now, let's say there's 2%. There's 2% of the population of this village. That means there's 2 people out of 100, by the way. 2%, 2 people out of the 100 people in the village, they're constantly telling people to go do this and do this. We're going to make the village better. You know what we could really do? We could make the village better if we do these things. We could make this a little Sodom and Gomorrah. We could do this. We could do that. And they promote these destructive things. It doesn't hinge on the 2%. remember, the devil gives you a choice. The 98% of other people, y'all know where I'm going with this. The 98% of the other people are the ones that have the choice. If the 98 people, if the vast majority of them decide, yeah, let's listen to these two assholes and do what they're saying, and then things turn into a wreck, then what? They're going to point and wail and moan about the two guys that told them this awful idea. How dare they? The two guys probably over there on a raft, making them a raft because they're getting out of there because they don't want to be strung up by a coconut tree. But how much of the blame lies with the two guys? I'm not saying no blame lies with the two guys. But if the majority of the other 98 people looked at the two guys and said, yeah, go screw yourself, we're not doing that. In fact, shut the hell up or we're going to run you off the island. Then things would still be running smooth, wouldn't they? When the 98% have made a wreck of the island, of the island village. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's easy to sit there and point and scream at the two guys, but who were the other 98 assholes who decided to listen to them? You got a brain. Your island has some history books. You should understand, and you had a choice. And the vast majority of the 98 other people decided to listen to these two guys. Two guys. Two guys. And now it's a wreck. Now everybody's pointing the finger at each other. It's your fault. No, it's your little group's fault. The problem is, collectively, in other words, enough individual people chose this path. The path that you have written record of, the path that you know is going to ultimately lead to destruction. But the idea of that momentary pleasure is too much to pass up. I want that momentary pleasure. There's always this misconception, unfortunately, among believers, that God has all these rules and he has all these laws. He just doesn't want you to have any fun. He doesn't want you to enjoy life. And you have believers that think that. You have believers that go around miserable in life because they think that somehow makes them holy. God has all these rules against doing anything fun. There's your first problem. Go shed yourself that lie, because that's a lie of the devil. Sin is fun. No, sin might involve some momentary pleasure, but it is never fun on the long time scale. It's always going to lead to destruction in this life as well as the life to come. You see, they'd be believers and they're like, they go around, they always sour and they don't believe in laughing or having any fun, having a joke or just, I'm a holy man because I'm miserable. God has all these rules. That means he doesn't want us to have any fun. And you have non-believers. Yeah, your God, he did that and want people to enjoy life. When the opposite is true. Your parent, if you've ever been a parent, you know, when you've got little bitty kids, they come up with all kinds of ideas they think are going to be fun. And you as a parent, you got to tell them no. Hey, it's going to be fun. I'm going to crawl into, I'm going to crawl in this little hole here. I'm going to crawl under this shed. It'll be fun. You're like, no, don't go under there. You can't go under there. You just don't want me having any fun. No, there's probably snakes under there. You'll be fun until you get snake bit. Child doesn't understand that. They always interpret it as you just don't want me to have no fun. You got to watch out for them. They don't understand. They think they're just having fun. You're warning them because you understand. Pitfalls or dangers there. You're trying to keep them out of trouble. They think you're just not letting them have any fun. People see it that way. Your religion, your God, he just doesn't want people to have any fun. It's just the opposite. There's nothing fun about being in a dysfunctional society. There's nothing fun about having your life fall apart because you made decisions that ultimately were based on chasing after a momentary pleasure, and that moment came and went, and now you're dealing with the consequences of that. And the consequence, the momentary pleasure might have lasted 15 minutes. The destructive consequences can last months, years, even your whole lifetime. You got 15 minutes of pleasure. 5 years later, you're still dealing with the fallout from your choices. And it's always your choices. People mock, they laugh, they ridicule. We're living in a society that's falling apart. And you just want to talk about Jesus. You need to be doing something. You just want to sit around and talk about Jesus. That isn't going to do anything. I tell you, sometimes people are getting used by the devil and they don't even know it. You know, they got the words of the devil coming out of their mouth. Remember when Peter, one of the disciples, he told Jesus, I'll never let you go. No, no. I ain't going to let you go to the cross. And Jesus said, get behind me, Satan. It wasn't anything against Peter, but he understood that unbeknownst to Peter, he is having the words of Satan flowing out of his mouth. People wind up, you know, unbeknownst to them, they got the words of Satan flowing out of their mouth. They don't even know it. What? You just want to talk about Jesus. That ain't going to change anything. We can do something. You know, you people want to do is talk about Jesus and talk about the faith and talk about your Bible. Because with your island of 100, island village of 100 people, and the vast majority of them threw away the faith, decided to listen to these two guys, and now there's a wreck. How are you going to fix that now on your island village of 100 people? You're going to have to start, you start with yourself. And then if enough people, see, it reverses the same way. The group of 100 is in a mess because enough individual people chose to reject God and to go chasing after these poor decisions that have now had a poor outcome. There ain't no easy, quick fix. You're going to snap your fingers and the village is fixed. Guess what? You're going to have each individual person start turning their shit around, getting it lined up, getting their stuff together. And collectively, then things revert back. Things revert back onto a positive path. That's it. Individual people collectively make crappy decisions. Your little village of 100 is going to be a mess. You're going to have to get everybody else. Individually, people have got to start getting back on the correct path, and then you're going to see those collective results. Everybody wants some sort of fast forward. They want somebody to show up, one guy, single-handedly, and somehow fix everything. Doesn't work. You know, not to use a sports ball analogy, I wouldn't be an American if I didn't use a sports ball analogy. In American sports ball, a.k.a. the pastime of the American people, football, American football, not your faggy soccer. Oftentimes you'll have a coach and he has a successful team. And they'll ask this coach, they'll say, you know, what is the key to your success? You know, this system, you got a system and your team wins games on a consistent basis. 9 times out of 10, that coach will say, the biggest challenge is he's got to get all of these players to buy into the system. He's got an idea. He knows how he wants to run plays, how he wants to run his offense and his defense, and the way he's going to run the game. That's no problem. The problem, the coach will tell you, is he's got to get all of these individual players to believe in that system too. As long as the players aren't buying it, they think this system's stupid. It's not going to work. It doesn't matter how brilliant the coach's system is because they're not going to put the effort in. Time and time again, a successful football coach will say, the first challenge, once you know you have a system and you know this system can work, you yourself know it will work. The biggest hurdle is you got to get those individual players to buy into the system. Because sometimes it's not going to look like the system working. Sometimes your quarterbacks are going to throw an interception. American sports ball analogies. But it works in this case. Sometimes your quarterbacks are going to throw an interception. And if everybody on the team throws their hands up and says, this system's garbage, let's do something else. You've got to have them buying into the system. So they say, well, those things happen, but we're going to believe in the system and keep moving forward. That's how it works. You believe in this system of the Lord. Yes, you're going to sin. Yes, there's going to be screw ups. But you believe in the system. You keep moving forward. And time again, that team wins games. That team wins championships. America. Land of football. But you understand what I'm saying. There's no magic cure. You get the best head coach in the world, and if none of the players are going to go along with the system, he's not going to get anywhere. You've seen this, too. Sticking with my sports ball analogy, there's been times you've had a coach, and he gets hired by a team, and that team doesn't ever do anything. He's trying to implement a system. The players just ain't buying it. I mean, yeah, they do what he says, but they don't really believe in it, which means they put in a half-ass effort. And that coach will get fired, and he'll get hired by another team where all of a sudden he's a championship coach. It's like, well, what happened? Well, those players bought into the system. You see? People sitting around, we're going to get a supreme leader is going to suddenly rise up among the people, and they're going to lead us to salvation. And yet, how is that going to be? Everybody's chasing after their own thing. And when somebody shows up and they say, well, yeah, we want to keep doing what we're doing. Most of you listening are probably fairly aware on some level of actual history of, say, pre-World War II into World War II, but around, say, the 1930s. And not the approved state version. And before the war broke out, that Weimar Germany was an absolute train wreck. It was Berlin was the boy bugger capital of the world. They were all about the gay. That was the place to go if you wanted to spend a little money and have whatever form of degenerate sex you wanted to have. I mean, the people were wrecked, Fathers were pimping out their own daughters to make a few bucks. It was a complete train wreck. And that when the National Socialists came to power, they turned the country around. While the rest of the world was in the midst of the Great Depression, suddenly they had a cultural revolution in a positive manner, and they turned their economy around. This isn't to get into this subject, it's to make an example from what we're talking about, so bear with me. We're not getting into the economic aspects of National Socialism. That's not what we're talking about. But it is a historical record that when the National Socialists came to power, Hitler came to power. They turned the culture around. They turned the economy around. Rest of the world's in the Great Depression. Germany has suddenly gone from a backwater Ukraine-tier shithole. Now, they're having an economic boom. They're having the people suddenly are turning back to their roots. They're doing the right thing. Why? Why was that? And no, it's not because Hitler was some amazing, messiah figure for the people. The people, he brought something to the people, which was basically, a system. The people bought into them. This is where I'm trying to apply this analogy, hopefully in a decent manner. The people bought into it. The people said, we've had enough of living like this. In your individual life or as a society, sometimes people got to hit rock bottom before they're finally willing to say, put their pride aside rather, and say, you know what? This hasn't led me to happiness. In fact, I'm absolutely miserable. We're ready to do something different. When Hitler and the National Socialists went to power, the people said, we're ready to do something different. Now, if they had come to power and said, we're going to turn this aside, we got to turn this society around, the people said, no, we like living in degenerate filth. They wouldn't have done anything. They wouldn't have accomplished anything. In other words, that turnaround that's historically recorded, they just don't like talking about it. That is the collective decisions of every individual person that was there at that time. Enough of them made the decision to do something different in their individual personal lives that you saw the collective result, you know, in society. Now, yeah, you get into, well, he had a charismatic personality and it got people motivated and all that. I didn't want to get into the woods of that per se, but just to use that as an example. In other words, just like our sports ball analogy, the people bought into it. The people bought into the system and said, yes, we think this will work. We're going to believe in it. There's going to be setbacks. Let's do it. We got to do something. We can't keep doing this. So we come back to where we are today. And the only answer to seeing things get better is the hard work, is individual people are going to have to decide, we've had enough of this. As a society, we're nowhere near that. They're still chasing. They're still whoring after other gods. And so you're going to continue to see those negative results. So what are you going to do about it? Well, you don't have control over what other people do. That's a reality of life. I always say the sooner you come to peace with that, the sooner you come to terms with the fact that you don't control other people, the sooner life's going to get easier for you. What you do have control over is yourself. I don't like this society. Neither do I. What are you going to do about it? You need to do something. The one thing you can do is start affecting the decisions you make, the path you take. That's what you can do. And if other people see that and say, you know, that looks better than this, what everybody else is chasing after, maybe the way you live your life serves as, you know, a testimony in and of itself, and other people see that, and some other people start making some decisions. That's what you can do. That's too slow. That's where you're at. Guess what? It is slow. The path to destruction is easy. Yeah, you can go down the slip and slide on the path to destruction. To climb back up the hill takes a lot of work. That's why you're always better off not going down the slip and slide of destruction to begin with. Because to come back from that, you got to start clawing and digging your hands through the mud and clawing back up the hill. But as a society, people have made these decisions, and here's where we are at. So what are you going to do about it is you're going to start saying, well, the things I can affect are myself and my own decisions, and I'm going to work on that. That's what I can do. I can't make my neighbor, I can't make politicians at Washington, I can't make anybody else make different decisions from what they're making. What I can do is make different decisions for myself. Everybody else saying, you're crazy. This is the way to go. No, I know that's not the way to go. Everybody's going that way, and we see the results. And again, if enough people make that collective decision, you're going to see different results. As long as people continue to insist on rebelling against God and chasing after these things, they're going to continue to reap the negative benefits. This is just how the system works. There's no getting around it. You don't get the momentary sin pleasure without the negative consequence. It doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. It doesn't. You got to make that choice. And again, it doesn't mean I feel like I need to clarify this, and we need to wrap up. That's not to say every pleasurable thing in life is somehow a sin. That's not to say that. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully you do. I assume you understand. It's not to say everything you can enjoy in life. Like, say, we're not as believers supposed to go around and be miserable and dour because every pleasurable thing is some form of sin. It's not to say that. There's a difference. And sin is a false promise of pleasure, but is actually a path to destruction. The path away from that is where you're going to find some enjoyment in life. some happiness and some fulfillment in life. Anyway, we need to wrap up. I hope you enjoyed the whole show today, especially the Christian specific segment. I hope you got something out of it. I appreciate all of you who return members here of the congregation. If you're new, I hope you got something out of it. And I hope to see all of you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.